So good evening, everybody.
Good evening. Good evening. Good evening.
You made me a little tired. So engage the Dharma talk in whatever you, everywhere you can. 30, 40 years ago when I would go see the Maizumi Roshi talk, his accent, his accent in English was strong, and he mumbled. So I almost could never understand anything he said. And I would always go away and say, God, that was such a great talk. So hopefully you'll be kind. Tonight, I want to, in a way, answer Ben's question and bring in something Simone said. But I want to bring something to everybody's attention to help us give ourselves completely as possible to whatever it is we're doing in our lives. But most particularly, I want to focus on Zazen. And I think the simplest and quickest way for me to say it is to underscore Dogen's teaching that actualizing the fundamental point means leaving nothing on the table. There's nothing left over. It's completely done. It means actualizing our lives completely, 100%. And this means bringing life to life as it comes up and through us, and also allowing life to come to life, not blocking life from coming to us. It's not going to work anyway. Life is going to come to you. As I said to my son when he was young and being young, I said, there will come a moment that you will discover when the pavement hits your nose. And at one point he said, you know, remember that pavement stupid thing you said? I said, yeah. He said, yeah, it hit my nose. So that's pretty good. Quick learner. But what I want to say tonight, fairly importantly, I think, is that for us to really actualize the fundamental point, is that in order to do it way down deep inside of ourselves, as deep as it gets, at our root, at our core, we must be willing to be sincere. And this word sincere is not something that's sort of emphasized a lot in studies of Dogen's teaching, but it's crucial. And that's exactly why I want to give it some airtime. I think it's really important. So when I say sincere, I mean it in a very particular way. To be sincere is a natural and pure and wholehearted openness that embraces intimacy with whatever we encounter, where we give ourselves completely, and here's the key, without any reservation. And that's very important. It means really being willing to encounter life as it comes to you. And that is one way of thinking about sincere. And so for those of you who have taken vows and precepts, to be sincere is the spirit with which we actualize those vows and precepts. Because you know how hard it is to say, okay, I will, in the name of life, I will not kill, I will not lie, I will not steal, I will not take advantage of people or misuse sensuality or my body, or, you know, I will not misuse relationship. I will live the Buddha way, basically. That's not easy. And without sincerity, we actually cannot actualize our vows. It doesn't work. It's always kind of, well, you know, if I feel like it. That's not actualization. Actualization is different from that. But everyone, to be sincere and in our practice and our lives means no holding back. It means that we make a determination not to protect ourselves from whatever we think threatens our very strong but very deluded conviction that what we are truly in our heart, in our being, are separate, independent selves. And this is what Simone was talking about today. This is a very strong delusion. And it's a very strong conviction that, you know, it's very hard for us to get rid of. We cannot pretend that we are totally disconnected from everything else, because one of the reasons that everything is going on the way it's going on today is because everyone's living as if that's true. And therefore we create this connection by living as if this connection is the foundation of reality, and it's not. So as soon as we notice any holding back, and Ben, this is one of the things I wanted to say in answer to your question about how do we maintain it. As soon as we notice any kind of holding back, we strengthen our determination to practice deeply by reconnecting ourselves to the source of our aspiration to practice, which is nothing less than the desire to end suffering for ourselves and in the world. We have to reconnect to that, to the source of that aspiration to practice. And when we do that, we're having we have the opportunity to express, to actualize that sincerity that I'm talking about. So we have to take a risk, because to be sincere takes a risk, and we have to have a certain amount of trust in ourselves. We have to trust that actually we can afford to take the risk. And how do we take the risk? Well, in our practice, we take the risk by breathing in actual air, by filling our lungs with the life-giving source that is all around us. Not with concept. We don't take a risk with fancy ideas. We breathe in. That's what the risk looks like. And then when we breathe in, we regain our focus and we regain our determination as we breathe out. And we let go of whatever it is that's been holding us back. And when we do that, it's like saying, okay, take the next train out of town. Whatever it is that's holding me back, whatever delusion I have, whatever sense of separation I have, I'm letting it go. And when we do that, and because we do that, sincerity arrives. We actually can contact the sincere nature of that we are, because we let go of everything that blocks us from actualizing sincerity in our lives. And what happens is that our being sincere fills all the space that was taken up by that fear, by reacting as if the threat was real, by acting as if our separate independent selves, that idea, is what reality is. And so once we let go of it, on a breath, I think we can afford a breath. And the more we practice it, the more we know what a breath is and what a breath can do. And then we actualize the moment of sincerity. And this is the case whether this seeming threat comes from one of our habitual ways of thinking or feeling about, you know, our versions of ourselves, or whether it comes from other people or from circumstances in the world. So in the Buddhist tradition, particularly, the heart and mind of being sincere is the very one that the Buddha maintained as he sat beneath the Bodhi tree, trying to get to the bottom of what reality truly was, or truly is. He had to have this sincere practice. And his awakening depended on his sincere and his determined practice. In particular, his meditation practice. Now, if you look at your lives really honestly, if you look at your lives as if your life depended on it, I think most people would admit that to be really sincere in the way I'm talking about takes an enormous amount of courage. Do you think that's true?
Yes.
It takes a lot of courage to be able to do that. And especially given the kinds of delusions and the challenges, say, that the Buddha faced, you know, as the story goes, when Mara attacked, you know, the Buddha's aspiration to realize and get down to the bottom of what life truly is. But those challenges that the Buddha faced in the form of Mara, those are the very same challenges that you and I face sitting here on our cushions. He didn't have some special set of challenges. He had his forms of delusion. We have our forms of delusion. What's the difference with the, you know, the characters are in our cartoon? What facing those challenges, though, with the kind of sincerity that I'm talking about, what that did is it strengthened his sitting, because he didn't give up. He based his practice on this sincere foundation that I'm talking about. And so what happened is his heart and his mind opened. Isn't that amazing? And it turns out that in order for us to really wake up to who and what we are and to the nature of reality, it does take a determined and sincere practice that allows the heart to open. Because as long as the practice is not sincere in the way that I'm talking about it, the heart doesn't open. It continues to hide. Right? Those little versions of ourselves continue to control our lives. And so practicing a sincere being is crucial to awakening. And when Dogen says you should study this intimately, he's talking about the kind of sincerity that I'm talking about. If he doesn't mind my saying that. If you look up sincere in the dictionary, you'll see it comes from the Latin sincerus, which it may surprise you. It means clean and pure. Isn't that interesting? Sincere means clean and pure. That's us. So we, for us, what it means is that we should have some confidence that we're actually fine just the way we are. That actually we don't have any reason to hide. So since we're by nature whole or clean and pure, it's another way to talk about it, we can afford to be vulnerable and we can afford to be honest. We can afford to do it. What we can't afford is to not do it because we see the results in our lives everywhere. That's not a risk that we can take. So it means to be willing to face every part of ourselves that we encounter, both in our, let's say, smaller personality selves. So, you know, all of those parts that we wish other people didn't, you know, talk about when we weren't in the room, you know, that stuff. But importantly, it also means being willing to face big self. And this is not as easy as, even though everyone says, oh, yeah, I want to really be who I really am. The fact of the matter is, and many people will say this, that in our zazen, right, in our zazen, when we're giving ourselves to our zazen, and we practice letting go of all the defenses that, you know, that we're using up. We don't follow our thinking, we don't follow our thoughts, our feelings, we don't follow anything. We just really stay in there. And then maybe we drop into this spaciousness, which is called samadhi, and it's very quiet, it's very deep in there. And then as that spaciousness expands, you know what can happen? Someone pulls back. Something pulls away from it. The very thing we say we want, which is to experience and to actualize our wholeness, that smaller self gets scared and can pull us away. So to be sincere and to have a sincere practice means that we allow ourselves to drop all the way to the bottom or to the truth of what we are. And we don't pull back in any way. And so when we do that, we're also able to give that sincere being to the world. And it's a natural expression for us to be able to do that without fear getting in the way. So in Zen, the way, and I know you've heard this phrase, but in Zen, the way of being sincere is, what's the word? Figured or imagined or something like that. It's called leaping from the top of a 100-foot pole. That's sincere. So we leap from the top of the 100-foot pole of our zazen all the way. And then we know something. It's important. It's important in our lives because when we do something without a sincere heart or a sincere mind, then whatever it is we do, we'll have something missing. And we can sense that gap. It's a kind of vague feeling of dissatisfaction. This is dukkha. This is the First Noble Truth. Right? This is that feeling that something's not quite right. And we know what's not quite right. What's not quite right is we didn't really do it. We saved a little for some rainy day or something like that, some bank account, or some way to feel safer rather than having the confidence that the Buddha that we are actually could wake up. So being sincere is the preventative for that kind of dukkha. Or if we're already in that situation and we notice that we're just, say, in zazen, thinking, coming back to sincere being in the way that I talked about, with that determination to really be present in there and stay with ourselves so that we can awaken, that's the cure. And so rather than following our distraction, we just take the next breath right back home. And when we do that, as I said, sincerity is there. And confidence builds that we can do it because we've experienced it. It's a great gift that we can give to ourselves. And also freedom is there. And this is one of the ways of describing actualization. Just doing that. I think that also one of the things I wanted to say to you tonight is that to fully actualize our lives is not to live away from the so-called smaller self. But to fully actualize our lives is to know our lives so well that we know that in our usual way of perceiving ourselves, there's loss and there's gain, there's attainment and non-attainment, there's winning, there's losing, there's attachment, there's aversion, there's all of those dualities. We have to know that about ourselves so that we can wake up from that. But I also want to say that when we act with a sincere foundation, which is what I was describing as what the Buddha was sitting on. He was sitting on a sincere foundation, right? Found right here in the heart, found right here on the earth. Right? When we act with a sincere foundation, then there is no winning or losing or, you know, gaining. Attainment, non-attainment, attachment and aversion. And this is because that sincere foundation closes the gap that our deluded thinking creates. It just takes care of it right away. And we just do completely what we want to do. And because there's no gap, there's no subject-object orientation to ourselves, which I mentioned earlier today, in which I had a conversation with one of the participants about. So there's no doer doing something. In fact, we can't find someone separated out from everything who we can even say is being sincere. There's just life actualizing itself, which nourishes all of life. I feel quite certain that everybody here has experienced what I'm talking about at some time in your life. I don't know what you were doing when you did it, but I'm sure you have. Because this is part of our human makeup. We actually know, we know how to do what I'm talking about. We know how to function as a sincere being, even if it's just for a second. It is in our makeup, but it's not something we have to learn how to do. It's something we have to strengthen. And we can strengthen it right on these cushions in our practice. And so we can have confidence that we know how to do it. And strictly speaking, the freedom that sincerity brings to us is one of the ways we can understand how to actualize those four vows that we chant. I mean, the big question is, right, how can I save all beings? How can I, you know, transform delusions? How can I enter all Dharma gates? How can I, you know, how can I? And the answer is, don't worry about I, sincere being. Let sincere being live. And so when we sit in our zazen posture, with our head level and our eyes horizontal and our nose vertical, as it says in the Zen literature. And actually, that's interesting. This is another tradition, but this is, I haven't thought of this exactly, but so this is like the relative world and the absolute world meeting, and there's a person in the middle who is the manifestation of that relative and absolute. That's one way of talking about it, but that's a whole other. I don't teach in that tradition. But anyway, so, and we sit with our head level and our eyes vertical, the eyes horizontal, and nose vertical, and our arms and our shoulders. We make a kind of very soft circle around our hearts, which don't need to be protected because they're wide open. And then we let our bellies be nice and big, and they breathe and quite naturally. And then we don't follow the mind here and there. We just allow the mind to settle right where we are in the palm of our hands. Very spacious and very peaceful. And then that's simply we are sincere life, actualizing the activity called zazen. I don't want you to think this is some kind of like big deal. We can do it right here, and we do it, and we are practicing it. We're actually actualizing sincere life in our practice. There's nothing missing, and there's nothing wanted. And there's nothing wanted because we're just right here. And I'm sure also that you have all experienced that when you are just right here, practicing sincere being zazen, you can experience yourself a little bit like a very small flame is ignited, and it's warm, and it's light, and there's enough room for everything in there. It's so quiet, and this is just sincerity, a practicing sincerity. You are sincerity. Sincerely practicing sincerity. And when we practice in this way, we are actualizing the fundamental point. We are actualizing and expressing Buddha nature, which is clean, pure, whole. And our practice is an opportunity to do that because we have no hindering strings holding us back. I've talked about compassion in the past, and I've mentioned that a lot of people think that compassion is a feeling. That's too small. Compassion is not just a feeling. And being sincere is also not just a feeling. It's way bigger than a feeling. It's not limited to the emotional realm. If you just hear those two words, being sincere, sincere being, it's not sincere feeling. It's way bigger. That's what I'm talking about. And so when we are acting as sincere being, when we are being sincere beings, there's nothing lacking from what we do, even if we make a mistake. So we're doing something, and if things work out, we say, great, the Buddha did it. And then if we do something and we make a mistake and things don't work out, we say, the Buddha did it. Because of sincere being. We don't get lost in all that judgmental stuff. Because there's no loss and there's no gain. So here's what happens when we sit in this way, when we practice in this way. When sincerity is the root of our zazen, all parts of ourselves kind of gently winnow their way through a very fine mesh. They just kind of, you know, float down through that mesh because we are holding this posture. And inside, mind, the heart are very clear. And so with courage, because it takes courage, as I said, then all the self-protective parts of ourselves kind of move through this mesh, all the versions of who we think we are. And all we have to do is maintain our sitting practice, which includes maintaining our sincere aspiration to realize and actualize ourselves. That's all we have to do. And just keep coming back to that and remember, I am a true and original person. I am the original person. As the Buddha said in the story, right? I alone am the world-honored one. I alone, I all one, am the world-honored one. Right? I am the world-honored one. You are the world-honored one. You are the original person. You are the Tathagata. It's only we suffer because we don't know it. And part of why we don't know it is because we don't believe it, so we don't even give it a chance. But when you're sitting in the way that I'm talking about, and all those personal versions of self get kind of winnowed out and move through that little mesh, there is no deluded self to support anymore. And there's no one supporting it. And we can know ourselves as the original person. I think that, in fact, I'm sure that as I say this to you, when the ego hears what I'm saying, that little unintegrated part of the ego, it tries to give us a problem. It doesn't like what I'm saying because it doesn't serve its purposes. The ego has a different agenda. It wants to make sure it doesn't lose its job and have to go on EI. But when a Buddha hears these words, the Buddha inside of us, the Buddha says, great, that's a good idea. I know what we'll do. I got a plan. We'll start out by saving all beings. And then we'll transform delusions, which is how we save all beings. And then we'll get out there in the world and we'll enter all the Dharma gates. Okay? Right? We'll become intimate with all the Dharma gates, and then that will end all the separation created by those delusions, so we can save all beings. And then, as long as we're on a roll, let's just live this way forever. Right? Isn't that what the Buddha says? That's what the Buddha says. Right. And in other words, the Buddha says, yeah, those are the four great vows. Let's do that. Good idea. And then we stand up, and we actually can do it. We take care of what's right in front of us. That's how we do it. Some people have been talking to me about, what are we going to do in this world that's just so crazy right now, so violent and filled with hatred? And, you know, and what I just keep saying to people, and there's more than one person saying, don't get trapped by other people's delusion. Don't let someone else's delusion trap you into being controlled so you're only reactive. Remember, you are the Buddha. You actually have things you can do based on a sincere foundation. And I think it's a good answer that we need to hear. I know it sounds pretty idealistic, and I know it sounds pretty romantic, and I think we all know that it's difficult, as Ben said, to maintain this level of sincere being in our daily lives. So we're so easily triggered by so many things. And those parts of us that we keep separate, you know, to protect, they end up undoing us over and over again, and then we find that feeling of dissatisfaction again. And you know, we're just trapped in the cycle, which, of course, the Buddhists call samsara. You know, we're caught in it. So I want to remind you, please don't forget, that at the root of ourselves, what I started out talking about, we are sincere being. It is what we are. And that having a sincere life and actualizing sincerity in our life is not just something to have, like an object you buy in a store and put on your shelf and show your friends at the Christmas party. The reason that we actualize sincere being is so that we can give it to the world. There is no point to it otherwise. And our foundation, the foundation of our vows and bodhisattva life is exactly that. I want to realize the original person, not the fettered person. I want to realize the original person, to give that person to the world. And the more we practice that right here, the more confidence we have that we can do it. I mentioned Mayuzumi Roshi. Mayuzumi Roshi was a Zen master that was very kind to me, and I learned a lot from. But probably because of all those Dharma talks of his that I didn't understand. But he was wonderful to me. And in his translation of Genjo Koan, after the section that Awakening One spoke about today, about the fish, Maizumi's translation is, no creature ever falls short of its own completion. Wherever it stands, it does not fail to cover the ground. This is really great. Listen to it. No creature, that's us, no creature ever falls short of its own completion. In other words, it's always whole. Wherever it stands, it does not fail to cover the ground. And Roshi means the ground that you're standing on. And because you're actually standing there, you're actualized standing there, it goes all the way through to the ground of being and spreads everywhere, which is how we actualize the vow to save all beings. So through our personal ground. I've loved this quote, "No creature ever falls short of its own completion. Wherever it stands, it does not fail to cover the ground," probably for 35 or almost 40 years. And in fact, when I was the Shuso, when I was a practice period leader at our home temple, this one phrase was what we studied the whole practice period. Two sentences. I thought that was actually like a little overachiever, actually. And it is what we talked about. And so I want to end my talk tonight by saying that to cover the ground just as we are is to express through actualization our own completeness in whatever form that takes. And also to, by actualizing in whatever form it takes, by actualizing with our whole being, by the present moment becoming the present moment, to use Uchiyama Roshi's phrase, to appreciate the enormity of what a life truly is. And Maizumi Roshi said, and Judith mentioned this, and I'm so glad she did, Maizumi Roshi said, the whole Genjo Koan, all of that teaching of Dogen's, comes down to three words. Appreciate your life. Isn't that sweet? So to appreciate your life. And this is what actualizes a Buddha's. The Buddhas we are and the Buddhas we encounter. And this is what makes life alive for us. And as you'll hear tomorrow, in the last section of Genjo Koan, a Dogen taught that sincere practice of the way, practice realization with a sincere foundation. This is a quote from the text we're using. Brings forth the gold of the earth. Isn't that beautiful? Brings forth the treasures of what makes life possible. Sincere practice of the way brings forth the gold of the earth and stirs the rivers of the long river, he says. Stirs the long river. You know, stirs that whole length of it. We can think of that as our practice or our lives. Stirs it. And then it stirs it so deeply and so authentically and so truly and so well that the waters of the long river turn into milk. But it's not done. We keep stirring, and that milk turns into cream. Rich, full, delicious, smooth. And that's our life, and that's our practice. So I want to really say to everyone here, I see your sincere practice. And keep going with it. I thank you so much for your sincere, more than effort, for your sincere offering through your practice at our retreat. And please continue in your life. Everything depends on it. So, thank you. We have just a couple of minutes if people would like to say something, either make a comment or critique my talk or ask a question. Jeff, please.
I understand Ben's dilemma on holding on to sincerity when we leave the cushion. And I understand what you're talking about, finding our sincere places in us that we hold on to. But there's so many me that I hold on to ideas of being a dad, ideas of being male, ideas of being a son, all these things who I think, how do I know if they're all conditions, they're all ideas based on conditions, how do I know? It's hard enough to hold this. part of you to know what is sincere in me. Mm-hmm. And I have most of what I think is sincere is stuff that I don't know. It's been mm-hmm. given to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. So, remember when I said that being sincere being is not limited to feeling, right? It's also not limited to an idea about ourselves. It's actually the actualization of no self that is connected to everything. That's what sincere being means. So as long as, for example, say as a father, you have an idea of yourself as a father, which means you have an idea of what a good father is. That means you have an idea of what a bad father is. That means you have an idea of what's right for a child, which means you have an idea of what... And, you know, this is all normal. It's all everyday activity in the world. And underneath all those ideas, what you can touch in Zazen is the bigness of what sincere being is. And the more we practice touching that, the more that becomes the source of our activity. And we don't need any of those other ideas. We root ourselves on the foundation of sincere being and recognize my idea of being a good father is maybe a good idea, but it's a little lopsided because it's conditioned by both activity and reactivity and what I experienced as a child and what I see in the world. My idea of what a man is definitely a partial idea because a man is much bigger than what I think. But when I go to the sincere foundation, which we can do in Zazen, that's why I'm asking people to understand what I'm talking about from the perspective of doing our practice. When we touch that, then we know something that's beyond all thought and all feeling. And then rooting ourselves in that, we act. Bernie Glassman, who is a wonderful guy, his instruction for Zazen is very similar to what I'm saying. He said, bear witness, so look at all your ideas, right? Bear witness to it without judgment. And then what you do will actually spring from a foundation of love. Because you're seeing yourself, or your ideas of yourself causing you to act, right? But you're not judging it. You're letting go of that part of the self. And then something wakes up inside of us. And that's, as he said, as good as it's going to get. That's sincere being. As close as possible. Mm-hmm. And when we practice our Zen, we can touch it again and again and again. It may be one of the only places we can touch it and still have some awareness of it. It may be. Thank you for your question. Maybe for one more minute, if someone has something in there. Not, yeah, I'll take it.
50 years ago, I went to a school in southern Saskatchewan that I hated, a fascist Roman Catholic boarding school. And Father Alvin Murray used to yell at us, to he who does what in him lies, God will not deny his grace. And today I was able to see that from another perspective.
Yeah. Would you say it again?
Say it again.
Yes, say it again.
To he who does what in him lies, God will not deny his grace. Mm-hmm. St. Augustine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he had a cigarette in his mouth all the time. He had nicotine on his nose. Father Alfred Murray. The whole story.
That's great.
Yeah.
This is just a side note, but how many of you know Aldous Huxley's book, The Perennial Philosophy? So this is a book that I read over and over and over again. I have for... I don't know, 40 years or something like that. And what Huxley is just so brilliant, and what he does, as far as I'm concerned, this is his most important work, not Brave in the World, this. Perennial philosophy is basically our Mahayana understanding of the oneness of being. I'm going to just simplify it that way, okay? He brings in quotes and teachings from traditions from all around the world that all bring out the aspects of what he calls the perennial philosophy, or I'll just say oneness of being. And it's just such a joy to be in a mind like that. And so it sounds like, did you say Arthur Murray? Did he also teach dance?
Alto, A-T-H-O-L.
Oh, Alto.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like...
Sort of controversial thing.
He got it. Got that too. Okay, I think we should not go to the Arthur Murray dance studio.